Blog Talk Radio.
One of humanity's greatest champions of all times slipped away into eternity last Thursday. Nelson Mandela now belongs to all of us as an example of the transformation of a people, a corrupt and racist system, and a country. President Mandela died last Thursday at the age of 95, and his life is being celebrated all week in South Africa. The world memorialized him on Wednesday at the SMB Stadium in Soweto, with nearly 100 heads of state presented from around the world and thousands of South Africans who attended. Today, we'll talk with Dr. Vernon Domingo, who experienced the sting of racism firsthand in his native South Africa after being expelled from his colored university and blacklisted for 18 months in the 1970s. We'll also pay tribute to President Mandela with a flashback of his 1990 visit to Boston when my daughter, Dr. Lorna Thomas-Farquharson, who with many other children sang for the Mandelas as part of the welcome entourage during that historic day. Nelson Rolihlahla Mandela, patriot, prisoner, president, power changer. This is Carol Copeland Thomas, and you are listening to a special edition of Focus on Empowerment. I was just ending a wonderful workshop that I had, actually a conference, a women's conference that I had attended last Thursday, 10,000 women at the Massachusetts Conference for Women. It was a really great time. And I was just sending out some emails. It was about 5 o'clock or so, and passed and saw where one of my Facebook friends, Marie Doubleday, had sent out an announcement talking about Nelson Mandela having passed away. I just sort of gasped. I didn't realize that the day had already come and he was making it and had already made his transition, but he certainly had done so. Even though he was 95 years old, he was the kind of individual, the legacy that you wanted to have around for years to come. We're going to pay tribute today to Nelson Mandela with a very, very special guest. And then later on, I will play an audio program that I conducted, a recording that I did a few days ago with my daughter, who is going to talk about what happened when, on June 23rd, 1990, Nelson Mandela came to Boston. But in the meantime, we're very, very delighted to have the professor of geography at Bridgewater State University, Dr. Vernon Domingo, and he is going to share insights about his life, what it's like from his perspective to be a mixed-race South African, now living in the United States and has been here for many, many years, but certainly his heritage, his people, and his history are all part of that South African equation. Dr. Vernon Domingo, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Ms. Copeland-Thomas, for having me. It's a delight to be here.
I'm so glad that I went to a meeting for AAUW last Saturday. I've known your wife for many years, and again, even diversity professionals like me can still learn. I always thought she was of Cape Verdean descent or Latina, had no idea that she was a mixed race or what is called colored person from South Africa. So first of all, share with us, and again, you have to go to my website, look at the blog page, or look at this web page for this radio show, and you'll be able to see Vernon and Beryl Domingo, and you make up your own mind. But give us your background and your lineage for both you and Beryl.
Well, firstly, we are black South Africans, even though the government in South Africa classified us as mixed race or colored. Those were attempts to divide and rule the population. Our own heritage, my wife and I, are mixed. I have a lot of Indian, some African, Indonesian. So it's a mixture of Portuguese, which is the last name. And those were sailors who came along the coast and had children, not always willingly from the women, with African and Indian women. My wife's heritage is more Malaysian. Her great-grandmother actually came from Malaysia as part of that British system. So we were born mixed and classified as colored. We refused to accept that definition. And so always defined ourselves as black and still do in the United States.
And tell us about the days of the 70s, the 60s and the 70s when you were growing up, and what led you to be expelled from your school and then ultimately blacklisted for 18 months.
That's right. I was and am a political activist in this country, standing out for a livable wage and against unjust wars and so on. In South Africa in the 70s, I was compelled to go to a colored university, which was a racist place. And eventually we rose up against the authorities. We closed the university down for 5 months. I was the chair of the committee, actually. We had police harassment, dogs, tear gas. And eventually we were expelled from the university. And I was blacklisted for about 18 months. And could not find a job, and wandered into the American Embassy one day, and they had scholarships, and I applied and came to the United States in 1975, my wife and I.
Wow.
To study geography in particular.
That's an amazing story. Were you and your wife already married during this time? Did you marry before you came to the United States?
Yes, we married in South Africa, actually, in 1974, in the midst of the turmoil, when I actually had been fired from a job, which was a terrible thing. I could not get work because I was on the list of 25 names, and I always say my wife rescued me from myself in those days, but it was wonderful. We were able to come together to the United States and to Worcester, Massachusetts at Clark University, and it really saved our lives in many ways.
Wow, that's just an incredible story. I'm just talking with you on Saturday, and Beryl, I just said, okay, when is your book coming out? Because in light of Nelson Mandela passing away, I bet there are so many stories like yours that are out there. So
that's right, yeah.
What does it mean, all these years later, now we know what has happened with Nelson Mandela, but, I mean, the chapters of his life are just amazing. What are your thoughts? You are a South African. You had to come to this country to find a place to work. I mean, you had to cut your ties, obviously, move away, but still that's your country. That's your land. So tell us, what are your thoughts at this point in light of the passing of Nelson Mandela?
That it is a sense of pride, sadness, clearly with Nelson Mandela's passing. Madiba was always the inspiration for even us young Turks in the 1970s. He was with a group, the Govan Mbekis and the Sisulus, and so we always looked up to that group as being steadfast. Madiba has stood firm. He's courageous. And he did more than any other person to bring the country together, and that was wonderful. And so we will miss him. So there's a lot of sadness, but a lot of joy, because he also had exuded a joy in life and a sense of reconciliation, which is wonderful. It's changed the way I think international politics could go. I say could. Some people may not follow his example, and I hope other people would, how to bring people together, even after a situation as disastrous as apartheid.
Right. You know, I talk with, I'm going to have an interview going forward, either at my website or on my YouTube page, by Paul Dutoit. He is white. He's from South Africa.
Sure.
He is of English descent. But his word, he said the key word, I interviewed him in Vancouver this week, he said the key word was reconciliation, that South Africa avoided a civil war because men like Nelson Mandela and obviously many others chose the path of reconciliation, diverted a lot of more violence that have taken place. Can you share with us the meaning of his name? I have practiced all morning, Rolihlahla, that name, and Tata. Tell us about those names, Vernon Domingo.
Well, yes. Because remember, Nelson was not his given name at birth. This was a colonial imposition. And so his real name was Rolihlahla. And you'll see that in check out on websites. And the interesting part about that name, it is the meaning. It means pulling the branch of a tree, Colloquially, it means being a troublemaker. And I think that's so significant. I'm glad. And, you know, when you, for those of us from South Africa, we were very involved in knowing about the civil rights movement in the United States. And we made those connections in our minds and followed what was happening in Selma and Montgomery and so on. John Lewis was you know, one of my heroes in the United States. Always says, as he speaks about trouble, he says, make some trouble, make some good trouble, necessary trouble, challenge the status quo. And so it's more than ironic that Nelson Rolihlahla Mandela was a troublemaker against apartheid, and he created a new society, as it were.
Wow. What about the word Madiba? I've had people to ask me questions.
Sure.
I've done some research on that. But give us the background and the meaning of Madiba.
Yeah, he comes from the Eastern Cape Province, a small little town, Kunu, and that's a term of endearment, particularly within a clan. And so he's part of a clan within the larger Xhosa community. And South Africans have used that not just as a clan name, but as a term of endearment, almost like a Mahatma, if you will. That he's risen to this within his lifetime and obviously now as well, to this level of significance. I am pleased that we've seen for billions of people around the world, billions, I even feel strange saying that, have been touched by this man and his life. And and that makes me, as a son of South Africa, very, very proud.
Wow, I bet so. I really bet so. And what about your ethnic group, your group? Are you also part of a tribe, a clan, when you are in the category of being a mixed South African? Where do you stand from that historical perspective and certainly now?
That's right. The colored population is a smaller population. This is the population that the white government denied. They could not recognize and acknowledge the fact that there had been the mixing of the races, as they would be, and particularly along in port city areas. And so we were denied access to resources. I taught as a colored person, and I earned 72% of a white person's salary. But the sad part is that someone like Mandela, classified as Xhosa, would earn 67%. And so that really got us moving to oppose the system because it was dividing and ruling, creating a hierarchy. We refused to accept that. And when I was a student, the group of the Black Student Association with Steve Biko was the group that we really allied ourselves with because it spoke about blackness. It's not just necessarily that skin color, I have a fair skin, but a sense of willingness to stand up to a regime that was so racist in every particular way.
We have a great question that came through with someone in the chat room, and the question is, why could Jews have Nuremberg trials, but black South Africans had to forgive those who were guilty of crimes like murdering black men and women and children? Should there not have been land distributions to blacks?
Yes, I happen to be on the side that, you know, where the government, Mandela, and later after him particularly failed was to redistribute the wealth. I think that is needed in South Africa. The inequality is very bad, being the most unequal society in the world right now. My hope is now that, you know, after Mandela's passing, there will be a rethink of how does that those resources, the gold, the diamonds, the land itself, how does that get more fairly distributed? I favor that more equal distribution of the wealth, absolutely.
And there's a follow-up and a last question that we wanted to ask you, and this comment also comes from someone in the chat room. It says 67% follows the three-fifths that still persist here in the United States when comparing black, white earning and wealth. And we could have a long discussion about that. What are your thoughts about that, Professor Dabingo?
That's right. Yeah, the income is vast between black and white. What that will do, I think, is spur young people trade union movements now increasingly to step forward and create change. And so I'm very concerned that that happens, and I think it will. I look back on my father, who was my father looked dark-skinned like an Indian, had a fourth grade education. And I remember my discussion with him after South Africa had become independent and free. And with all of those problems that were there, he said South Africa, and I believe, is still a better place. And he held out his hands to me. He had a fourth grade education. He did hard physical labor. He did not have the pieces of paper and certificates I have. And he said that for the first time, the foreman at the job where he was working called him Mr. Domingo. And he cried when he said
powerful.
That. Because
that's powerful.
Before that, he had been boy or you or even was called by his first name, even though age is so revered. But from that day onward, he would be referred to as Mr. Domingo. And I think that's really, really important. You know, economics is a huge factor, inequality, but now there's a chance for people to relate better to each other. And I think that's the heritage of Mandela. White and black can now relate to each other.
And now talk to each other, and the divisions hopefully will ultimately disappear in time. We are definitely positively going to bring you back in the next couple of weeks. We've been talking with Dr. Vernon Domingo. He is a professor of geography at Bridgewater State University here in Massachusetts. This has been a wonderful, very insightful interview, and I promise, Dr. Domingo, we're going to bring you back on the air. Thank you so much for being a guest on my program.
Thank you, Ms. Copeland-Thomas. It's been a pleasure. Right. Thank you very much. All the best.
Take care now. All righty. Thank you. Well, we're going to go on now, and that was a great interview. We are definitely going to bring him back on the air. Want to move on now and play. This was about 10 minutes long or so. The interview that I did with my daughter, Dr. Lorna Thomas-Farquharson, recalling her remembrance of having that great man, Nelson Mandela, come to Boston in 1990. This is Lorna Thomas-Farquharson. Well, I've interviewed a lot of people, and this just really warms my heart. I'm really excited because I'm now interviewing my daughter, my older daughter, Lorna Thomas-Farquharson. And in light of the recent death of Nelson Mandela, who I now believe belongs to all of us in the world, we had a flashback because when he was released from prison in February of 1990, he literally did a world tour going to Paris and other cities in the United States, around the world, and we were very privileged that he came to Boston on June 23rd, 1990. So, Lorna, welcome to my show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, we're going to do a little flashback, and I just want you to paint a picture. You were 14 years old, isn't that right?
Yes, I was.
Yeah, so, I mean, now all these years later, 23 years later, we're going to take everybody back in time and let them know what the experience was for you as a 14-year-old.
Well, at that time, I was a member of Charles Street AME Church in Boston, and I was a part of the youth choir there. And we were told during one of our rehearsals that we were going to begin rehearsing to welcome Nelson Mandela, who was coming to visit the Boston area. And for many of us, we had heard of Nelson Mandela, but we heard of him in an unfortunate sense in terms of him being in prison for so long and all of his fights for trying to gain equality for South Africans, regardless of race. And we did know that he was released from prison, but had no idea that he was planning to visit Boston. So the fact that we were going to have him in our hometown was one big deal, but then that we were going to prepare to welcome him was another big deal. So that's when our rehearsals began, and they were rather intense, as they typically were, but intense because they wanted to make sure that we represented ourselves well and showed the respect that Mr. Mandela deserved. And then also because we were learning a different language. None of us were familiar with the language that goes the national anthem. So you figure you have a large group of teenagers and adolescents, and we in spite of that, wanted to be in our best behavior. So we had several rehearsals, and then the day came where we all congregated. There were thousands of people there, and for some reason I remember wearing a white top. I think we had to wear a white top and maybe a black bottom or black skirt, and all of us were rather close together because it was such a large group. And
right.
when our leader stood before us and raised her hand, and then we started to sing, and it was just so exciting because as we started to sing, then you could hear others in the crowd who were familiar with the anthem sing as well, but it was just a roaring at the end of it, just because all of us were so happy and excited and proud to have Mr. Mandela there to visit us.
Right. I'm just thinking about the flashback, all the planning that took place. Want to let our listeners know also that they deliberately and intentionally didn't just take the then released, newly released Nelson Mandela to the popular places here in Boston. You sang at the Hatch Shell, Lorna. That's where the Boston Pops every 4th of July plays, and it's a very wonderful place in Boston, in the downtown area near our river, the Charles River. But we also intentionally took him to our neighborhood, so the urban neighborhoods. He actually spoke very briefly at Madison Park High School in Roxbury. And your father, my former husband, I see the clips now, they're playing them now. He was in the background along with Louis Alisa, many of the ministers. I saw Byron Rushing, who was a state representative, Charles Yancey, who's a city councilor, the late Bruce Bowling, who was also a city councilor. All of the leadership team in Boston came together and made sure that he got a very comprehensive look in the city. And then it culminated at the Hatch Shell with you and your brother and your sister singing. What was it like? Your sister's a little shy. She's not going to come on, but she's in the background. Just give us your reflection. You were the big sister to Mikey and Michelle. What was it like for you being a big sister working with them and Andrea Thibodeau and Gigi Adams and I think Tiffany Dortch was also there and others who were part of your choir from Charles Street?
Well, it was very much a family affair because the young people who I sang with were not folks that I didn't know and folks just kind of all of a sudden came together for this event. These were young people who I grew up with and young people who I spent every Saturday and Sunday with and also during the week as well. So it was a family affair in terms of those of us who were in the choir and absolutely a family affair, not only because of the church members, but because my sister and brother. And I will admit that because Mikey and Michelle were younger than I was at the time and in that kind of silly age, more so my brother, that was one time of many, but one time in particular where he held it together. He was not silly and rambunctious and knew that this was a serious and honorable event happening, as did all of us. So that was something that just I was, from what I remember, was very impressed with, that in spite of our youth, in spite of us, you know, being kids and wanting to play around, we knew that this was something to remember and take advantage of in a positive way.
You wanted to represent. I mean, your dad was pastor of the Church of Charles Street. Reverend Opal Adams was the choir director. And Elma Lewis, who is now passed on, great woman here in the city, she was a taskmaster. So she wanted to make sure all you young people represented well. What was it like working with Elma Lewis?
She didn't play. And because she carried herself with such distinction and was serious, then you knew you had to interact with her in that same way. So I just remember she didn't play around. You knew what you had to do, and you did it, and if you didn't do it properly, she would correct you and have you to do it again.
So before we ask you to give a rendition of Kosisiki Lele, just a beautiful song, I did some research. It was written by a South African in the late 1800s, a black sub-Saharan South African, written in commemoration for one of the ministerial officials in the Methodist Church, and has been sung ever since and was adopted by the ANC, the African National Congress, of which Nelson Mandela was a part. It became a freedom song, a protest song, and is now part of the national anthem of South Africa combined with the Afrikaner sign song and a little bit of English stuff splashed in, so three different languages. When you think and you reflect back on the fact that you were touched by him, and just quickly tell just quickly about Nelson Mandela's granddaughter who met your brother. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I remember his granddaughter came to the church, came to Charles Street, and somehow she and Mikey met and socialized, and before she left Boston, she left with a crush on Mikey. I remember they exchanged numbers and addresses, and I know they corresponded for a short while thereafter, but it was quite a big deal that Nelson Mandela's granddaughter had a crush on my little brother.
We must say that Nelson Mandela has several children, and this was, I guess, the granddaughter of one of his children who was living in Boston, I guess working or going to school in Boston at that time. And skip forward to 2009 when I met Winnie Mandela in Cape Town. That same daughter, a part of the family, still has connections here in Boston. So I remember that granddaughter calling Mikey from, I think she was in Paris at that point.
Yeah.
It was quite amazing. So, Lorna, would you like to sing Kofi Sikelele? And maybe your sister will join in, too. She said she's going to listen.
Well, I must say that clearly it's been years and years since I was formally taught the song, but for some reason it stayed in my mind and in my heart. And coincidentally enough, I happened to be talking about Nelson Mandela earlier this week with someone that I work with. Clearly this was prior to his passing. And in the course of the conversation, I explained how I learned the national song for anthem for South Africa and sang the song to this person. And then once we found out that Nelson Mandela passed on Thursday, on Friday I was giving my oldest daughter, I have a 5-year-old and a 2.5-year-old, and I was giving the oldest daughter, while the 2.5 was listening, a lesson about Nelson Mandela and sang the national anthem to her. And I tell you, every day since then, she's like, Mommy, can you sing it again? And I taught it to her, so now we're singing it together. So I will sing it, but again, I apologize for
that's okay.
But Kosi Sikelele Africa, Malupakani su panduwayo, Izwayimi tandaro yesu, Kosi Sikelela Tina Lusapawayo, Kosi Sikelele Africa, Malupakani su panduwayo, Izwayimi tandaro yesu, Kosi Sikelele Tina Lusapawayo. Wozamboya, Kosi Sikele la Tina Musapowayo.
Well, what else is there to say? This is a great week, a tribute to a patriot, a prisoner, a president, and a power changer. He is currently lying in state in Pretoria in what is now called the Union Buildings, which will now be renamed, as announced by President Jacob Zuma, the Nelson Mandela Buildings as a result of his life and now his legacy. He will be buried on Sunday in his hometown village of Kunu. And if you are interested, you can go to my websites, and the whole lineup of all the activities this week are there. Thank you so much for listening. We will continue this conversation in the weeks to come. Definitely have Dr. Domingo back on the air. Reflect on Nelson Mandela's life. And what can you do to make a difference in your society, wherever you live, with the people that you interact with? Thank you so much, and enjoy the rest of your day or week. We'll be back next week with another important, exciting show.